And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, great to be with you.
It's great to be in the studio today. Thanks, Dave.
Fantastic. And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
I am glad to be here, David. Thank you.
Well, you know, on days like today, I think about the great columnist and satirist H.L. Mencken, the sage of Baltimore, who once wrote that the notion of democracy is that the common people know what they want and they should get it good and hard. So I guess that that's what we're looking at after the results of this most recent general election in the Commonwealth and across the country.
Well, we look at the system we're in. We have a representative democracy, so it's very complicated. It's our American system of government. It's built that way. It's what makes our constitutional republic work. But it's challenging, as you noted. It is a system by which those in power can be communicated with by those who aren't. And what we saw on Election Day was a lot of folks communicating their frustration.
Yeah, so it's no doubt about that, and certainly that the Democrats, both in Pennsylvania and nationwide, did exceedingly well, and so that the Democrats swept the two statewide judicial races, one on Commonwealth Court, one on the Superior Court, that all of the justices and judges who were up for retention to serve another 10-year term, that they were all given that nod for another 10 years by a margin of like 70-30, like it wasn't even close. That there had been efforts to try to mobilize a vote no campaign that obviously went nowhere, and that Democrats also won the county executive race in Erie. And of course, Erie is one of the bellwether swing counties. And so this would seem to suggest a degree of discontent with President Trump and his administration and what it's doing.
Yeah, it also seems from the results, and we're looking at these results. They aren't official yet, of course, right after the election here. But it seems from the results that frustration did trickle down to some of the county row offices, local races as well. So a lot of traditionally Republican seats and some local races also went Democrat. So it seems that turnout seems to be high with Democrat voters in this election, and that frustration seems to have trickled down from the statewide offices, like you said, all the way down into some of the local offices as well.
Well, the Democrats have been very effective with getting their voters registered to vote by mail. And then once the county offices mail those ballots to the Democrat voters, that the Democrat interests have been very effective with bird-dogging those ballots to make sure that their voters return them. And so that was a big part of their victory in this most recent election.
Yeah, you're right about that. And actually, it is interesting because during last year's election, during the 2024 election, Republicans made a real effort to get those banked votes, early votes with their voters as well. And they seem to have made a lot of headway with that last year. There were a lot of Republican banked votes, early mail votes, and that did not seem to play out in this election this year. So it seems like that was a big election year phenomenon, which did not carry on into the sort of municipal election year. So that might have to be something that if the Republican Party is going to continue to make headway there, they're going to have to focus on that moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, you're very well aware of the voter trends where the big race for president people turn out. Sometimes the midterm election where you have a governor or a U.S. senator, that there's a bigger turnout. But then the odd year elections with judges and local races, that participation tends to drop off.
It is perennially hard to find, you know, to present those elections in a way that encourages people to come out and vote. They might even care about the issue, but they don't feel that same momentum they feel when there's a big name on the ballot. And that's just part of the reality of our system. And waves like this are part of the reality of our system as well. It's not uncommon to see a red wave or a blue wave. It's happened when I ran for state legislature in 2010. It turned into a red wave, and I was part of something much larger than Pennsylvania. States all across the nation were turning red at that time, and so these things happen. And then there have been blue waves since that, and there's been red waves, and again
the pendulum swings.
That's the sea we have to be able to navigate, though, to ultimately advance the policy agenda that we care about. And so we as believers in the free market and the believers in a government that operates not from a top-down manner, but through the actual participants in democracy. It's a big deal to have a system like that, but it's complicated and it's not easy.
Yeah, no, that's certainly ever true. And I'll say it again, what the listeners always hear me say, that representative self-government is not a spectator sport. So
exactly.
For folks who didn't exercise their franchise, you can complain about it. But again, you miss the chance to make a positive difference.
I think Steve makes a great point that we see these waves. It is part of our political system, and it's especially true here in Pennsylvania because we absolutely have a razor-thin margin with voter registrations here in Pennsylvania between Ds and Rs and also with independents. So it is really difficult to read the tea leaves in any given election, and Pennsylvania is definitely the perennial swing state. So we're going to see elections like this that sort of swing on the margins for sure. So
yeah, I mean, and so clearly a big win for Governor Shapiro, that not only did his the candidates he supported in the Commonwealth here, not only did they win, but also that he did campaigning in New Jersey and in Virginia for the gubernatorial candidates there, both of whom won, and it wasn't close at all. And in fact, the governor candidate in Virginia on the Democrat side really won running away, and she brought with her a number of seats in their General Assembly, and also carried to victory their candidate for Attorney General, who had been caught up in what I thought was a scandal, where it had revealed messages where he had wished death upon his political opponents and his political opponents' children. So that's a little bit distressing that there would be enough voters who would not consider that to be disqualifying, that they would put such a person in office, and not only any office, but to be the top law enforcement officer in their Commonwealth. So I guess what is it they say, that every time that you fail to uphold a standard, you establish a new standard? So I would not have expected that making terroristic threats would be off the table, but, well, there you go. And certainly also, I think that the biggest story of the night is the victory of the socialist to be mayor of New York City, and that this is going to be that Zoran Mondami is going to be mayor of New York, that he beat the former governor Andrew Cuomo, and that Mayor-elect Mondami has promised all kinds of stuff, free bus service, free child care, government-run grocery stores, and I think that's just his opening bid on restructuring life in America's largest city. So again, you wish him good luck. That if socialism works, it'll be the first time. So I think we can sit back and watch and see what happens.
Yeah, in large measure, I mean, you can talk about policies and ideas when you're running for office. It's much harder to actually lead the execution of those policies and ideas once you are in office. And that's what we see with any new candidate who has not been in the field before on a level like that. How is it going to go? It's most likely, as you said, in most cases it's been tried. It's or really in all cases it's been tried without and out socialism. It's not going to be successful.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor, from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So, Steve, I'll take issue with your statement there a little bit. Because Mondami had been a member of the city council which is dominated by Democrats and has people as far left as he is, I think that he will encounter very little political opposition, at least structural governmental political opposition to his initiatives. And so then the question becomes, well, how is the citizenry going to respond? And in particular, capital flight and people moving out of New York City to other destinations. That somebody commented that the big winner in yesterday's election was the state of Florida. And so talent and capital are mobile. And if Mondami's agenda is on soaking wealthy people, we'll see how many wealthy people volunteer to stick around to be soaked.
Yeah, and that we've seen over the years. We talk mostly on this show about Pennsylvania policy. And we've seen that year after year, we're losing population to these other states where they do things in a way that is more effective and efficient and successful. So it is a good point that folks in New York may become exasperated. It's already a complicated state. Again, we don't talk that much about New York on our show, but it's a largely rural state with this one huge city in it. And it creates a real dichotomy between what it's like if you're a New York City resident versus the rest of the state.
Yeah.
And there are many, many individuals throughout the state of New York who espouse a business-friendly climate but can't get that done if your major city in your state becomes repellent to those who have capital and they want to invest it.
Yeah. And certainly there are many suburbanites in New York State, whether it's in, you know, Long Island or elsewhere, who will look on what's happening in the city. And again, maybe Mondami will be very successful. His policies will work. People will be happy. And that those who endorsed him will gain the political benefit from that. But if Mondami's agenda is not successful, if his policies fail, then with Governor Hochul running for re-election next year, that his work and her endorsement of him could affect political events in that state.
I think coming back to what we talked about, the frustration that sort of came out in this election, I remember seeing polls going into the New York City election, and most of the concern of the voters there had to do with the high costs of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking that that's why Mamdani was ultimately elected is people were hoping that this sort of socialism solution is going to bring costs down. Now, we know that that's going to be, like you said, if socialism works, this will be the first time in history that it works. But I think it comes back to sort of an emotional, sort of a visceral reaction that people are having right now. And that came out during this election. And most specifically in New York City, people are emotional, they're frustrated, and they voted for someone that they think viscerally can help them. And I think that was true across the board with the election results. I think people are voting with their emotions. They're frustrated, they're anxious, they're upset about the cost of living is not coming down, and they're anxious and upset about what can be done. And when that happens, they vote with their feelings and their emotions.
Yeah, and I'm and again, to give the Democrats credit for a successful political strategy, that the federal shutdown, where the Senate Democrats blocked a clean continuing resolution so that government could stay open, that they, you know, successfully held the line on reopening government to the point where we were in the first days of people not receiving their government assistance mm-hmm. checks, and that the Democrats used that event or series of events to whip up support among their party faithful, you know, saying that President Trump and the Republicans wanted to starve people. So, you know, to the extent that the Democrat base is inclined to believe those things, notwithstanding the protestations of less radical Democrats like Senator Fetterman, who said, no, we got to keep the government open, that gambit worked. Mm-hmm. That gambit worked, that they were successful in blaming Republicans, and at least in the minds of their own voters, to get their own vote stoked up and turned out, and it worked.
And really, the shutdown of government is so different when it happens at the federal level than what we're used to here in Pennsylvania, where we also have a budget impasse, a standoff. It's not a shutdown as such, but the differences are stark, because in Pennsylvania, the state employees still get paid during a shutdown, so during an impasse. So they are not – it's not the level of fever pitch that you have when you look at the national shutdown because of the impact on employees who work for the government. Very different, and that's important to note. In Pennsylvania, we are deep into our budget impasse. The state is still functioning well in the interim. The issues are still being debated and disputed and so forth, as it should be, to work out a budget deal that actually makes Pennsylvania more friendly and attractive towards business and capital and the families that live here. So that's what we're watching here in Pennsylvania versus what we're seeing unfold in New York and beyond.
Yeah, and again, just as a reminder that the budget impasse in Harrisburg has been caused by the governor and the House Democrats requesting a spend number that is many billions beyond what we actually take in tax receipts year over year. And so I guess it's an argument over at what speed we should accelerate towards the cliff, and that the Senate R's, that their position pretty much is that when you're in a hole, stop digging. So that's the nature of the stalemate, and we'll see how that works out, if it ever does work out. Of course, one of the other big pieces of national news was that voters in California approved the proposition that will take the congressional remap out of the hands of their independent commission, send it to Sacramento, and that Governor Newsom has said that he intends to redraw the map to eliminate more Republican congressional districts. He says that this is a response to the actions taken by Governor Abbott in Texas and the Texas legislature. So we're in an escalating arms race over redistricting, reapportionment, and through that control of the U.S. House of Representatives. And this is the sort of thing where you don't know where it's going to wind up. The fact is that the large Democrat states like California and Illinois have already put in place maps that are extremely disadvantageous to Republicans, and that this, if this is going to continue, it would seem as though the Republican states have more room to, I don't know how to say it the right way, more room to be unfair. So it's
not like that, definitely they had the opportunity to do the same thing on a higher, on an additional level that actually ends up making it more favorable for them.
Yeah.
So it's a dangerous thing to start to messing around with redistricting for a purpose like that specifically.
Yeah.
And what can happen one cycle away, two cycles away, 10 cycles away, the unintended consequences that can unleash on the system, and the very thing you may have been trying to stop or advance will be the opposite.
Right, because mm-hmm. if you get a wave election by redistricting,
you've thinned out the districts and their strength.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You make those districts somewhat more marginal, and you at least run the risk of losing them in a wave election. But I just, my pet peeve with, so in Maryland, they have one of the worst gerrymanders in the country, and that they've got GOP representation down to just one seat on the Eastern Shore. And I think that there's talk in Annapolis that they may remap to try to eliminate or take away that seat. But this is a district that neighbors Pennsylvania here, talking about Western Maryland, that forever and ever that you had a congressional seat based in Frederick, and then all of the counties to the west, rural up into the Appalachian Mountains. Roscoe Bartlett was the U.S. representative there for some years, and that seat had been represented by Democrats, but that they were moderate rural Democrats back when such a thing existed. Well, in the most recent remap, that the Democrats in Annapolis took Frederick, added it to another district, and then took the rural counties in the far, far west by West Virginia and follow the Potomac River down to suburban D.C. and tacked those rural folks in, again, with the wealthiest suburbanites
packing
in Maryland,
packing and cracking.
And it just, as a small town person, seeing those, like out there in Washington County where Hagerstown is, like that's just, I don't know, that riles me up.
Well, I think the hyper-partisan gerrymandering, this is just exacerbating the issue that we have at the national level with some of the hyper-partisan gerrymandering. And that, in my opinion, actually, I think exacerbates the partisan disagreements and the stark contrast and the really divisiveness that we have at the national and the state level, because it really does exacerbate the distance between the parties when you have districts that are specifically made to exacerbate the extremes on mm-hmm. both sides. So mm-hmm. you exacerbate this division and divisiveness throughout the whole country, which I'm not sure what the solution to that is, because we seem like headed down a really bad path.
Yep. Right. Buckle
now.
Up, folks. This is where we're going.
Yeah. I don't know how we fix it. It's frustrating, and it just does not seem like it's going to end well.
Of all the predictions I've ever heard on this show, I think that one is the new gold standard. This is not going to end well, Rebecca Euler. So we're coming down now to the last of the time that we have here. So let's just go around the horn. Steve, where can people go to find out more about you and your group and the things that you do?
They can visit the Commonwealth Foundation at commonwealthfoundation.org on the internet.
Outstanding. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. Thanks very much for listening from Steve and Rebecca and me, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.